This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to the AIPIS show for accredited income property investment specialists and those who aspire to be. If you're a real estate, mortgage, or financial professional, this is the place for you. We'll explore innovative investment analysis, sales, marketing, and income-generating strategies for the most historically proven wealth creator, income property. Learn from the experts as they show you how to build a better business and a better life.
Welcome to the AIPIS show for accredited income property investment specialists and those who desire to be. This is your host, Jason Hartman, where we talk about increasing your income, your productivity, and just generally having a better life while serving your clients better with America's most historically proven asset class, income property. We have a great interview for you today, and we will be back with that in less than 60 seconds. It's my pleasure to welcome Gary Beasley. He is co-founder and CEO of Roofstock, and this is an innovative idea that solves a lot of pain points for both real estate investors that already own property and those who want to purchase it. Gary, welcome. How are you?
I'm great, Jason. Thanks for asking.
Good. Where are you located?
We're based in Oakland.
Fantastic. What is Roofstock, and how did you come up with the idea?
Well, Roofstock is at most basic level a marketplace for single-family rental homes to be bought and sold in an online environment very efficiently. So the basic idea is homes that have tenants in them, you shouldn't have to vacate them to sell them. And so the idea is they could be sold with the tenants in place, much like any other real estate asset. And the marketplace we've created can be accessed, you know, from anywhere in the world, and it allows people to access this asset class directly and very efficiently.
Mm-hmm. It just seems so obvious, doesn't it, Gary? When I sold my last apartment complex, I didn't tell all my tenants they had to move so I could sell it. You know,
right.
I had 125 units. I didn't kick them all out, suffer this huge vacancy for months while it was for sale. Why should it be any different with residential single family homes? It shouldn't be different. Can definitely see the need for this service. I know that when I was in traditional real estate years ago, my clients dealt with this dilemma. A lot of rental property owners that own single family homes are thinking, yeah, they'd always like to sell. They'd, you know, like to maybe take advantage of some point in the market, and they've got 6 months left on the lease and they can't, their hands are tied. Why should it be that way? You know?
Absolutely. It's funny because I use that same analogy, but what we're doing is we're finding buyers for whom the tenant is an asset, not a liability. And just the existing ecosystem through the traditional MLS channels is just really not set up well to sell leased homes. It's set up really well, you know, arguably, to sell vacant homes to owner occupants. And so we're just filling this gap for the roughly 10% of the housing stock, which is rental homes. So it's about $2 trillion of assets that we're addressing. But you know, it's about 10% of all the housing.
What's the number of homes in there? You say $2 trillion worth, but what's the actual number?
Yeah, it's about 15 million,
yeah,
15 million and change.
That's what I would say too. Just wanted to get your opinion. And then the question is, when you dice that up a little bit more, are those all mom and pop owned single family homes, or are they institutionally owned? I mean, we hear a lot about institutions playing in the market nowadays, you know, since the Great Recession. But
yeah,
overall, when you really look at the marketplace, it's a relatively small percentage compared to all of the mom and pops, because there's just so many of them out there. Can you dice that up any more for us by chance?
Sure. I'm very familiar with the industry structure, having been in it now for about 4 years. So there are only about, call it 250,000 homes owned by what I would say large institutions who own, so say, 1,000 homes or more. And so that's, call it 250,000 out of the 15 million. So, you know, maybe 1.5% of the market is institutionally owned. But that is what sort of makes the headlines and people see. But the reality is the vast, vast majority of homes are owned by mom and pop investors. And I think the statistic I saw recently was something like 84% of the homes are owned by owners who own four or fewer.
Right.
So it's a really long tail. So a lot of people, sort of like you and I, you just might own a couple of homes and you might inherit them or buy them as investments. And there aren't really a lot of tools to help people either buy or sell them or operate them efficiently. I ran one of the largest platforms that happened to be public, that we owned 15,000 of these homes or so. And we had great analytics, great tools, great data. What we're trying to do at Roofstock is take a lot of those types of tools and make them available to the mom and pop investor.
Did you say what you wanted to say about how you thought of the idea and everything? Did you get that out?
My co-founder, Gregor Watson, and I both were, you know, active in the industry as principal investors and, you know, bought a couple billion dollars of homes ourselves through our different platforms. Each of us were in a situation where we were trying to sell homes. And what we had experienced was there was no elegant way to sell them without vacating them. And having gone through and sold a bunch of homes that way, it ended up costing about 10 to 12% of the value of the home to sell it. And a lot of people will say, well, shouldn't it just cost 6% for a real estate commission? But that's really only half of it. You have downtime when it's vacant and you're losing that rent, which is about 1% a month generally. And then you have some capital expenditures to prepare it for sale. So really expensive. So you sell a home for $100,000, you're netting $88,000, say. And so I said, this is crazy. And this gets back to what you mentioned earlier. Why would you vacate an apartment building to sell it? You never would. So the simple idea is the best buyer for that investment home is someone for whom that tenant is an asset. And it could be someone sitting in Beijing or in another part of the U.S. or down the street. And they will buy the home and value the fact that it has a tenant. And because we only charge our sellers typically 2.5%, that's their total cost compared to the 10 or 12. We're able to attract a lot of interest from sellers who say, hey, if you can do this, if you can market these homes and I don't have to put a sign in the yard, I don't have to vacate it. And if it doesn't sell, kind of no harm, no foul. So it's been very easy for us to get inventory. And having been in the industry now for a number of years, I happen to know the leaders of all the largest platforms. And so they're all of our early customers on the supply side.
So would it be fair to say now that the sellers you have, the inventory on your website is institutional sellers selling those properties, right?
Primarily. Long term, this will look a lot more like Airbnb, where individual owners will be able to self-certify and upload their properties and sell them through our platform. In the near term, what we wanted to do is make the market more curated and control it a little bit more. And so by going to the largest owners, we know what their improvement standards have been. We know what kind of tenants they've been putting in the homes, and we know they've been buying in good areas. It's just easier for us to get started because this was a nice kind of filter to look through. That being said, we're starting to certify homes from smaller owners and a couple of individuals to sort of test that out. The beauty is a home's a home, and whether it was, you know, a big institutional owner or a smaller investor, these things can be inspected and vetted and marketed and packaged up and be essentially sort of equivalent type assets. Mm-hmm.
So when you say self-certify, what does that mean?
Let me first take a step back and talk about what our certification process is, where we certify the homes now. In the future, what we're doing will be done with an app where an individual like you could do it yourself, but that we're not doing that yet. So to certify a home at the highest level, what I mean is we certify the property itself, the tenant, and the local property managers in the area to make sure that they're of high quality who can manage your home post-purchase. And so to start with the home itself, what we do is we work with third-party inspectors to do a complete home inspection. And if you go onto our website at roofstock.com and go into a diligence room on an asset, you'll see there's an inspection report. These are detailed inspection reports. You could read them, and it identifies any issues that the home may have. That's really, really important to sort of know what you're buying. The beauty of having the transparency of an inspection report is if the home needs a new roof or it needs a new HVAC system, it's priced into the transaction because the seller knows it's very clear that someone knows, oh, I'm going to have to spend $8,000 on a roof. We discount the list price. We certify the property itself to make sure it's functionally sound. You run title, so there's a title report in the data room. We run valuation, so you could see how the value of the listing is supported by local comps. Do a complete 3D visualization tour. I don't know, Jason, if you've had a chance to look at that, but you could actually do sort of a fly-through of the home without furniture, so you could see the actual floor plan and how it all fits together.
And how are you doing that as a virtual tour? that like a computer generated thing somehow?
It's actually a computer generated animation. The problem with just doing it, if we were to do a virtual tour, it would be cluttered with everyone's things, their belongings. And so that's not what you're buying.
Tenants never have clutter though.
Exactly. And so what you're buying is an income generating widget, basically, which happens to be this home. And so we wanted to be able to show what that looks like. So we partnered with a small startup here locally who had some really cool technology on that 3D mapping side. And so we've worked with them to do this. And so now this can be done through an iPhone app, and it's fantastic. So you get sort of a 3D tour as well as a three-dimensional floor plan that you could look at. And that's really helpful. Because really what we were trying to do was say, what as investors do we need to see before buying a home sight unseen? Because that's what we're asking people to do, and that's what people are doing on our site. Because we bought a lot of homes sight unseen, and over the last few years, they were typically off the courthouse steps, but you had to guess of what kind of condition it's in. So really,
the 3D tour doesn't tell you that. That 3D tour is
No.
Give them the floor plan to do that. What company creates those, by the way? I've seen them before.
We don't give them the floor plan because you don't have plans on these sims. It's all generated by an iPhone app with kind of geospatial recognition. So it goes through and it basically takes a video of the entire interior of the home
using a single
robot and turns it into a rendering.
So the inspector is probably doing that, right?
That's right.
Yeah, got it.
That's exactly right. And so you're right. That doesn't show you the condition of the home. It shows you the floor plan and the general, what the finishes look like. You know, is it marble? Is it granite or whatever? But that's why we also do the inspection. That's where you get the condition of the property. Mm-hmm. And so with those two pieces, you can then, everything else you could do from a desktop, you could do neighborhood analysis, check out schools, crime, home price appreciation trends, you could run your numbers. And that's why we're doing these transactions and people aren't physically having to bother the residents, because that's a primary issue with selling occupied homes. You can't really show them, right? Because someone's living there. It's incredibly disruptive. So what we have is a process with our sellers where we show up at the home once, do the walkthrough, the inspection, the 3D mapping gets done. All that stuff happens in a course of about an hour, maybe 90 minutes, and then we're done.
Is that just your home inspector when you say we show up?
So yes, it depends on what market it is. To date, we've actually been using a separate person to do the 3D mapping. It's ultimately going to be done by the inspector. We'll have our local broker walk through the home at that time. So they physically kind of have seen the home and can help write the description and things like that. So there's a team of two or three people typically who will come through and do the once over on the home, and then we'll digest all the information and create the listing.
Got it. And so the seller needs to get an inspection. They probably need to pay for this stuff, I assume.
No,
the program, right?
Seller doesn't do anything. We do all that for them. So we coordinate the inspection. We pay for it. Mm-hmm. We make it as simple as possible for sellers. All they have to do is share some basic information on the property. We do the certification work. We, run title through our title partners. We do the 3D mapping. We do all that stuff for them, and we pay for that. And then we recoup that when the property is sold.
Right. But a lot of it, like what you said earlier, is you said, well, no harm, no foul if it doesn't sell.
To them.
So, I understand that. But it is to you, because you could invest a bunch of money in deals that never go anyplace. So what are your thoughts about that? Or if they take it off the market, do they have to reimburse you for that or what?
So we're willing to eat those costs as business development costs in order to get people comfortable with our process. So far, it doesn't seem to be an issue because we're selling the homes pretty rapidly off the site. I think over time, maybe that we ask sellers to pay for those. Right now, we don't want to create any barriers. So it's not something we're overly concerned about.
Okay. When the property does sell, how much does the seller have to pay you for helping with that transaction?
The standard fee is 2.5%.
Uh-huh. What are they doing about licensing? Because you're a platform, so I'm sure you're not a broker in all of these states. You're probably not acting as their broker, right?
We are actually a licensed broker.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
In all of those different states?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, we're licensed everywhere we're doing business. And then just to kind of close the loop on the fees, we charge a half a point from the buyer. Mm-hmm. So the total fee is typically 3%, but 50 basis points that we get from the buyer is all that it costs them. And having run a company with lots of people previously, I know it would cost us a lot more than that to pay for our overhead on the buy side, because you have acquisition staff and analysts and construction people and leasing people, and you carry it through until it gets cash flowing. Oftentimes that could be 3-4% of the value of the home by the time you allocate all the costs to it. So one of the things that I think revolutionary about this platform is you, Jason, as a kind of an individual or an institution, a hedge fund or any other fund, could start buying homes off the site. And you don't need that infrastructure. You don't need to find local resources. You don't need to renovate them or get them leased. You can sort of just be an investor in allocating capital into the assets. And it's all, they're all professionally managed by local property managers who we certify. Mm-hmm. And we also provide a layer of asset management. So we sort of sit between you as the investor and the property managers and roll up your financial statements for you. If you have different property managers, we'll put them all into the same format. You know, basically be that intermediary to hold these property managers accountable for good performance. And because we certify them and we give them a lot of business, they give us, you know, really good pricing, which gets passed through to the owner.
How many transactions have you done so far? How old is the company?
The company started about a year ago May is when we funded the company.
Of 2015.
Okay. We then built the team and the website. We have about 30 people today. We did our public launch of the website in March of 2016. We've been ramping our sales nicely. We started off by design with a relatively small amount of inventory, about 50 homes. We've now got over 100 homes on the site. We've sold through most of the inventory, really all the original inventory. And so we're now ramping to where our sales, we believe in the third quarter and fourth quarter, are going to be substantially greater than where we were last quarter, which is always the objective. And as we show success on pull through on the sales, that makes us comfortable to go out and get more inventory. The good news is there's plenty of inventory out there, good inventory from a lot of our supply partners. And one of the things that I think is important to note is they're not selling these homes because they're bad homes. I would assume that this is one of your questions. I would ask this question is, well, why are these guys selling if they're so great? What's happened is there's been a fair amount of mergers and acquisitions and portfolios being bought or companies merging. And a lot of times the overlap of those portfolios creates not optimal sort of operating footprints. And so what they want to do is they might be overexposed in Atlanta and underexposed in Florida or vice versa. Right. And so, or they'll look at certain neighborhoods and say, wow, I only have 100 homes in this market. I either want to get to 300 or I want to sell these 100.
Right. And obviously you're talking about an institutional owner.
Correct. Yeah, right. That's exactly right. So these are the larger institutions who have thousands of homes that potentially they would want to sell here through our platform over the near term. Longer term, as I mentioned, the supply will come more from smaller owners.
So would it be fair to say you've done maybe 100 transactions so far, something mm-hmm. like that?
Yeah, a little over between what we've closed and what we have under contract, a little over. And then we've had a lot of activity here really over the last couple of weeks, and we're looking forward to putting up a considerable amount more inventory over the next couple of months.
Good. So you're the broker of record on all of these transactions in all of these different states. You must be, I assume you're working with the property managers as kind of your local agent or something like that, because, you know, brokers in all these areas, there's some obligations, obviously. They got to go inspect the property themselves, mm-hmm. and they've got to be local, don't they?
That's right. We have a local broker in each market.
Right.
So that's the person who works for us and is licensed and does go do the walkthrough mm-hmm. with inspections and is the local market expert. And we want to have kind of a combination of obviously a very efficient centralized platform, but due to the nature of the business, we've got to have some local presence.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, good. Good stuff. On the seller side of the process, we covered the fees. The buyer pays a little bit of the fee too. How does the process work though? They see a property. So the property, once it's certified, it goes on your website. It's got pictures. It's got the 3D tour. It's got the inspection report, the title. And then a buyer goes and says, hey, I'm interested in this property. What happens now?
There's a couple different ways it could happen. We're finding some people will just buy the property. They'll go through and they'll just buy it online, essentially, put it into their shopping cart, hit invest, and go through and buy the home without even talking to us. That's the minority of transactions. We had someone from China do that last week, and that stuff is starting to happen. But what's happening mostly is what will happen is people will reach out and send us a note, call us, chat with us, and say, hey, I'm interested in 123 Main Street, or I'm interested in Tampa. Can you talk to me about how this works? So we have a sales team really who talks to people and explains how the website works, can put them in touch with additional research if they're interested. And so it's kind of a combination of being there as a resource to help answer their questions, show them how the website works. Some people are quite self-sufficient and will use our analytical tools on the site. Some others don't even know that they're there. I don't know if you saw this, Jason, but you could go in and change whatever assumptions you'd like on your underwriting. You could change your assumed expenses or home price appreciation levels or financing assumptions, and it generates an IRR, you know, a return calculation for you separately. And so some people call and say, explain to me how this works. So that's why we have people available to kind of consult on that basis.
Yeah, excellent. Good stuff. Good stuff. What else do you want people to know? Maybe something I haven't asked you yet.
Well, I think one thing that I get asked a lot is, why should somebody buy homes versus, say, just investing in a REIT? I used to run a REIT.
And that's a real estate investment trust.
A real estate investment trust. And REITs are very good for certain things. They're very diversified. You get excellent liquidity, but they're stocks. And so I think people should think about REITs very much as part of their stock portfolio, as opposed necessarily deciding should they own, you know, an investment home or a REIT, because it's, they can move with interest rates and with the stock market, where property investing is a bit different. So I think the other advantages of investing, say, through us is you get really direct ownership. I think there's an opportunity for better dividends, oftentimes buying the asset with really low, you don't have all the corporate overhead and things you have in a public company. So if you look at the REITs, the dividends that you get off of the public REITs, they tend to be, you know, 2 or 3%, maybe 3.5% oftentimes, where if you buy the homes themselves, you could generate, you know, twice that or more oftentimes, depending on the homes you're buying. So you could get more current distributions. You could focus on markets that you like, that you want exposure to. You can use more leverage. In REITs, they're typically maybe 30 or 40% leveraged, which is fine, but it's a conservative way to use leverage. If you wanted to, say, finance up to 80% in these investment homes, you could do that with very attractive agency financing. And we have partnerships where we can help our retail investors access this money, and oftentimes it's sub 4%, 30-year fixed money for these investment properties.
Right, right. But that's limited to 10 loans, right?
Correct. Yeah. Absolutely. It's limited to 10 loans. But for, you know, many of our retail clients, that's fine. And if they wanted to do more or form an LLC, we can hook them up with other lenders.
Sure, sure.
And then the other alternative that we recently launched is a fund where investors can come on, and if they don't want to necessarily buy individual homes, they could put money into a targeted real estate single family rental fund that has a qualified fund sponsor. The first one is sponsored by a fellow named Lawrence Pelosi, a very experienced investor in the space. And you could just invest in that fund. And Lawrence is buying homes off of our site and aggregating a portfolio of, you know, up to 100 of these assets.
Is he related? I know you're in San Francisco area, so is he related to Nancy Pelosi?
He is.
Oh, wow.
He is.
The one who said we've got to pass the bill to read what's in it when it came to Obamacare. Yeah, great.
Right. That's right. Lawrence is a great guy. He's had a lot of experience in investing broadly, but he's one of the early investors in single family rental and is a great sponsor for our first fund.
Okay, so that's a fund. And basically, your involvement in the fund, it sounds like you just supply inventory to it, right?
Yeah, there's two things we're doing for the fund. You know, as a marketplace, we want to remain neutral, so we're not selecting assets or anything like that. But we're also providing the custodial and administrative services for the fund. So the idea is we can provide the accounting and reporting for the fund sponsor, roll it all up to that person, and handle the distributions. The fund sponsor's job is to select the assets as a smart investor, decide on distributions, and then ultimately decide on when and how to sell the homes to generate the last distribution to the investors. And
right.
So we're providing basically the ecosystem and infrastructure. And we anticipate there being more and more fund sponsors setting up funds on our site to do that. And it's a way for us to create more liquidity for the inventory that's on our site, but also create, you know, highly curated and targeted set of homes that these fund sponsors can choose from that meet their investment criteria.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Interesting. The fund has got to be pretty new because you're pretty new, right? So there's no returns yet really that you can quote or anything.
Right. It hasn't even been launched officially.
Oh,
we're kind of quietly marketing it. We are really just starting to talk to the first investors. You know, it will launch relatively soon.
Is the fund using leverage, though? See, that's the problem with funds, is they usually can't leverage the assets very well, if at all. You know, is there any leverage in the fund?
The target leverage is 60% for this fund.
How are they financing the properties then?
Lawrence has a term sheet from a lender. There are a number of lenders out there that do loans to funds and LLCs. like this. And so he has one term sheet on pretty attractive terms. That financing definitely exists. And it didn't a few years ago. It did not for these types of things. You'd have to do it unlevered, but now you can use leverage.
Sure, sure. So a couple things as we wrap up here, just a little skepticism for you. I'm wondering, why do you have properties in some of these ridiculously high-end markets? I mean, maybe because you're located there, like San Francisco, for example, but even to a lesser degree, San Bernardino, Riverside, or Miami, certainly. You know, these are Southwest Florida. These are expensive markets where you really just don't have the yield. I mean, are you just kind of banking on appreciation or...
The theory there is but one man's trash is another man's treasure. There are people who are interested in getting exposure, say, to California home price appreciation. And when you think about the Bay Area or, you know, pockets of Southern California, but really healthy economic growth. I just read today that overbidding in Oakland was the highest probably in the country in terms of the percentage over asking price for housing. And Alameda County was where we have a lot of our homes, and in Contra Costa County is very high too. So, you know, I think you can get a lower yield. So somebody may say, yeah, I'll take a 4% or 4.5% yield in a market that I think is going to go up 5% a year versus someplace I'm getting a 6% yield, but it might only go up 2% a year because it doesn't have the same kind of job growth. Yeah, it's a higher yield. So I think a lot of our investors are total return investors. Now, we'll see. Early returns are, there's more interest.
But that appreciation is obviously pretty speculative.
It is. No, absolutely. You can't sort of eat appreciation. You have to really believe it.
Remember publishing an article, I can't eat my iPad.
Yeah. Yeah. Early on, there seems to be more demand for some of the more yieldy product. That's what tends to be jumping off the shelves with us. But I think the other stuff, what we're finding is some foreign buyers calling and showing interest in California because of the supply constraints. I think that's the biggest issue. And so I think what we've seen is really rapid rent growth in a lot of these California markets and very little new supply being added, and good job growth, which bodes well potentially for long-term capital appreciation.
Yeah. The other thing is in some of the more linear markets that I prefer, Orlando, for example, the property prices seem a little bit high. I mean, you can't quite get the 1% per month rent. It doesn't look like on any of the properties as I'm browsing the site. Who is counseling the owners in terms of the valuation? We didn't talk about that. I mean, are you doing some desktop appraisals, or is the owner just sort of picking the price out of thin air, or what? You know, for example, you've got, you know, properties that are, say, $131,000 renting for $1,195. I'd like to see that property rent for $1,300.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about the valuation there.
The list price is ultimately set by the seller.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we will not take a listing if we think it's unfairly priced, and so we do turn down listings. So, and then there's also a valuation report on each home that is in our data room. So you could see the comparables that were used to generate those valuations.
Right. And you really are taking a listing, you know, just like a
Yes.
traditional broker, right? Yeah.
That's correct. And so as I'm sure you could appreciate, the 1% a month is a rule of thumb.
Mm-hmm.
But depending on whether it's in an HOA or not, there's lots of things that influence what the real estate tax assessments are in that particular
Yep.
area. The difference between gross yield and net yield. And so ultimately, I think people, they dig in, they make assumptions on the expenses, and a lot of people are pretty familiar with these local markets. And we're selling plenty of homes that have sub 10% gross yields because people say, well, you know, it's something in the mid fives on a net basis in a market that I like, that's going to stay leased and is going to appreciate, you know, 3 or 4% a year is totally fine. But again, it depends on the investor, and that's the beauty of marketplaces. There are some people who kind of want a AAA bond, which is very low risk, maybe a higher quality tenant in terms of FICO score and income, but your yield's going to be lower, but it's lower risk. And then, you know, you can move into more of a junk bond, if you want to use that, continue that analogy, which might be a much, much higher yield, more volatility, more risk, but higher potential return. And so
Right.
we're not necessarily placing judgment on whether one is right or wrong, but what our goal is to try to characterize it as in a transparent fashion as we can, and show you what the schools are like, show you what the crime scores are like, show you what the incomes are like, and then over time be adding more and more third-party kind of unbiased research, and then people could decide what is right for them.
Okay. Since I gave you a little skepticism there, I thought maybe we'd close with something that can really get some positive word out about, and that is management. What are some of the, just quickly, best practices or part of the management service that you provide after someone buys a property? How does that work?
There's kind of two high-level goals, I think, if you look at Roofstock. One is, as the name implies, try to make real estate investing as easy as buying and selling stocks. That's kind of our, you know, end goal. We've got a lot of work to do to get there, but we're attacking each piece of that. The other is to separate the investing from operations in real estate. So the operations are handled by local property managers. And so there are countless property managers around the country. What we do is we go into each of these markets and we certify two or three in each submarket that could be choices for people buying off of the site. And we put them through kind of a rigorous interview process and make sure that they manage enough homes, they've got a good track record, they've been around, they've got good reporting and accounting, all that kind of stuff. And so we do that work. So you as an investor buying off our site don't have to sweat it. You can go with, you know, one of the two or three property managers that are active in that area. And, you know, each of them, you could read their description, what they're good at, what their prices are, and just select one during the checkout process. And so we make it very, very easy. It's important to have high quality property management in these, because many times you're not going to live there. You're not going to live where this investment is. And that's one of the things we're really enabling through this platform, is you literally could be in India or China or Europe and owning homes here, and the local property managers dealing with the, you know, collections and repair and maintenance and all that kind of stuff. And we provide that sort of reporting. So creating that layer of, you know, that ability to invest elsewhere. I think what one of the facts that I think not a lot of people know is I think something like 70% of investment homes are for mom and pops are owned within an hour's drive of where they live.
And that's a huge mistake. You know, right. That's such an old-fashioned idea.
Yeah.
But we still get it. Isn't it funny how we are as humans, how illogical really we are? Because we will invest in stocks and bonds of companies internationally, halfway across the world sometimes, right?
Sure.
And for some reason, when it comes to real estate, it's got to be near us. I don't know why, especially with all of the fantastic tools we have nowadays that make geography a lot less meaningful than ever before, you know?
Yeah.
And then, of course, even if we did live in the best market in which to invest, we wouldn't want all our eggs in that one basket necessarily anyway. We want to diversify geographically.
Correct.
And be in
Absolutely.
Maybe 3 to 5 markets. So yeah, that's a funny thing, isn't it?
It is funny. And so some people we're finding are doing that very thing. They're looking to sell homes that they have, you know, say in one market and diversify into others. But one of the other interesting things we're seeing are millennials buying homes off of our site, multiple properties, who don't even own their first home.
Yeah.
They live in the Bay Area. They can't afford to buy a home. We've had one Google engineer here buy 5 or 6 homes already. And you could buy a home for $100,000 or $120,000 in Atlanta or Florida, where here for $2 million, you really can't get much. And so they could get on the property bandwagon, build some equity, rent here, and buy elsewhere. And I think there's not that same kind of need with millennials to own where they live. There's much more of a consumption, pay for what you consume philosophy, and,
right.
and liking to have that flexibility to move, get a job in Austin, you move to Austin. You don't necessarily need the mortgage tying you down. And so that's another phenomenon that we're
as seeing. I always say, the best thing you can have on a resume is mobility.
Right.
The ability to move to where the jobs are. Yep.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Good stuff. The website is roofstock.com. Gary, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Jason. Enjoyed it.
You know, sometimes I think of Jason Hartman as a walking encyclopedia on the subject of creating wealth.
Well, you're probably not far off from the truth, Penny, because Jason actually has a 3-book set on creating wealth that comes with 60 digital download audios.
Yes, Jason has that unique ability to make you understand investing the way it should be. It's a world where anything less than 26% annual return is disappointing.
I love how he actually shows us how we can be excited about these scary times and exploit the incredible opportunities this present economy has afforded us.
We can pick local markets untouched by the economic downturn, exploit packaged commodities investing, and achieve exceptional returns safely and securely.
I also like how he teaches you to protect the equity in your home before it disappears and how to outsource your debt obligations to the government.
And the entire set of advanced strategies for wealth creation is being offered at a savings of $94.
That's right. And to get your Creating Wealth Encyclopedia series, complete with over 60 hours of audio and 3 books, just go to jasonhartman.com/store.
If you want to be able to sit back and collect checks every month, just like a banker, Jason's Creating Wealth Encyclopedia series is for you. This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company, all rights reserved. For distribution or publication rights and media interviews, please visit www.hartmanmedia.com or email media@hartmanmedia.com. Nothing on this show should be considered specific personal or professional advice. Please consult an appropriate tax, legal, real estate, or business professional for individualized advice. Opinions of guests are their own, and the host is acting on behalf of Platinum Properties Investor Network, Inc., exclusively.